And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's going on, everybody? DJ Bucky here, Move the Sticks, presented by U.S. Marine Corps. And Buck, we finally got our good friend here to join us on the podcast. We've suckered him in, and we've pulled him in.
Yeah, Charles Davis.
Charles Davis back. Is in the house. CD, what's going on?
Hey, how you guys doing? You must have hit the bottom of the barrel on this one, fellas.
No, we like to ramp up our coverage. We like to save the All-Stars for the final home stretch here. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I trust you. I trust both of you are as well.
We're doing well, man. I want to get your sense, just big picture right now. We've been going through all these guys, you know, and plowing through them and talking about different positional strengths and what we think could happen in the draft. Just kind of your big picture take on this draft class from where you are right now, CD.
I'd probably about the same as – when I say about the same, I think there's probably a consensus out there that there are plenty of skill guys, as always, more runners than normal. The quarterback situation depends on how you want to look at it. Some people see it halfway decent. Other people say, not as good as the years before. Offensive linemen, not nearly the numbers we've had in the past. Remember, what year was it we had where all of a sudden, like, every guard we knew in the country was going to the top 10?
We had, like, five of the top 12 picks were offensive linemen that year.
You remember yep. that year where all our
Jonathan
looking
Cooper,
at each other?
2014?
You know, you guys both did it for a living, and I'm willing to bet that in every draft room or meetings that you had, we're not taking guards that early. Are you kidding me? No one does that. And that year it was like, well, they're the best player, so you got to take them. And then you flip it over defensive side. And for me, it's the one thing that I've locked in on and probably are going to hold on to throughout the draft. For so many years now, we've always had wide receivers. And we got plenty of them again this year. Mm-hmm. But we never had cover people to keep up with them. Right? I mean, you guys, I don't know what it was like on your boards, but I'd sit there and look, and I'd tell people, any round, pick a receiver, I can find the guy for you.
Yep.
But I ran out of cover guys around round three, round two. I don't think we have that this year. I think we finally have a year where we have plenty of people who can cover. It's like the college game finally is catching up to itself, because all those years you put all the best players on offense and you didn't worry about it. And now, finally, just by sheer necessity, it seems like the defenders are starting to catch up a little bit.
You know, it's funny that you talk about the college game. So we can't talk about the draft without talking about the quarterbacks. And for so long, we've heard this class at quarterback kind of been labeled as a lukewarm class, not a lot to get you fired up about. But now as we get closer to the draft, it seems like there's some action heating up around the top five quarterbacks: Deshaun Watson, Mitchell Trubisky, Deshaun Kizer, Pat Mahomes, and Davis Webb. So from your vantage point, which guy of those big five is the guy that you're willing to kind of put your paycheck on to gamble on?
Well, I start with Watson, Bucky, because I'm not as big a gambler as other people might be. And I always come back to, I've watched him do it for 3 years, and I watched him do it on big stages. And he had an effect on those games. He wasn't just carried along by his team. Back in the day, and if he hears this, he may want to clothesline me later. But you remember the name Jay Barker?
Ooh, yeah.
Back at Alabama?
Yep.
He was your classic, you know, because we use that term game manager, and I think we probably all agree that game managers really should be a term of admiration, not derision. Mm-hmm. And people use it, oh, he's a game manager. Well, the best game managers are the quarterbacks going to the Hall of Fame. You know?
Yep.
But we use it like, oh, that means he really can't play. Well, Jay Barker was like that ultimate guy at Alabama. You know? Pretty decent player, but no one gave him any credit for all the wins that they had. Watson had an effect on those big games that he played. The two ACC title games, beating a one-loss North Carolina team, a perennial Virginia Tech, beating Oklahoma and Ohio State in national semifinal, and then going 1-1 against Alabama. And in every one of those, he had a big effect on them. So that's why he's my number one out of all the quarterbacks. But the one that intrigues the heck out of me, and if I jump up on the table, I'd probably have other people in the room want to punch me off of it, because I think he gives you a mixed bag at times. But that's Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes. Because I'd want to grab him and go 24/7 tutoring him and getting him right. There's something about him that intrigues the heck out of me, and it goes against the grain, because what was the last Texas Tech quarterback out of that system? That we go, yeah.
That's a trick question. That's a trick question.
We haven't had him. And I think we're going to get it out of Mahomes. For some reason, I just like the kid, even though I've yet to see the same play that's been run by him be run the same way twice in a row. It just doesn't happen with him. He's all over the place.
Who are the guys, CD, when we talk about him with Mahomes, and you've got a good library of players, too, going back, the only one I can think of is Favre in this regard with mm-hmm. Mahomes. This is what I struggle with a little bit. And that all of his most successful plays have nothing to do with the play call. So, in other words, he's not living in the structure of the system at all. Everything comes outside of the system. And when I try and look at guys that have navigated the next level, you just said a little bit earlier talking about game manager should be more of that reverential term. I mean, this is the opposite of that. This is nothing that he does has anything to do with what's been called. So when I try and go through my own personal catalog, I got to go back to Brett Favre to find somebody that lived on the outside of the system as much as this kid does and had success, prolonged success, I should say, at the next level.
That's a great point, and every time I think of Favre, when we talk about it in that context, I think of some of that NFL films, because he was great footage, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you remember, Bucky, when there's that one piece where he comes to the sidelines and Holmgren's standing there, the Big Show standing there staring at him and says, Brett, no more rocket balls, okay? and you remember Brett goes, yeah, I'm all chinged up. And it's like, you're like that all the time. And somehow he made it work for him. And to your point, DJ, it's counterintuitive with the Mahomes because none of that has translated in the past. I'm kind of breaking the mold here and thinking that it can translate going forward. But part of my reasoning is there's more opportunity in the NFL now to have coaches who are willing to do a few more things than we had in the past. Because, the college game has finally had an effect on the NFL. Because it never used to before. It always used to be from the NFL down. And now we're seeing more and more stuff that quarterbacks are doing where you're kind of meeting them halfway because the 20-hour week rule means they're not getting the same coaching the guys got in the past in college.
Mm-hmm.
And then the NFL, you can't get them full-time anymore either because of the collective bargaining rules. So you've got to meet them where they live before you start expanding them. And I thought Dallas was a terrific example of that last year with Dak Prescott. Met him where he lived. And then expanded as things went along as he showed that he could take on more and more stuff. But Favre was one, and I thought early Romo. Because early Romo was a lot of that broken play stuff, too, before he really got ingrained into their offense.
And looking at the quarterback position, a little below that. So if we say that those are the top five, do you have a sleeper quarterback that you can say, look, this is going to be a middle-round guy that's going to outplay his draft status?
Well, I think Peterman has been the guy that's been kind of identified from Pitt. And I'm hearing all this late momentum. When I say it late. This momentum has been building for my Tennessee Vol, Josh Dobbs.
Yep.
And it doesn't surprise me with Dobbs for this reason. I knew that once people got a hold of him and interviewed with him and sat down with him, that's when you get blown away. Because Dobbs is, he's got all the makeup you're looking for, characters off the charts, excellent personality. Then you throw on the athletic ability that you see on tape. I thought he became a better thrower this year, a little more definitive on what he was doing. I thought it came together for him in a lot of ways, the Nebraska game, the bowl game. And then the momentum really built because I think Senior Bowl week, when Hugh Jackson coaches you hard and you respond to it and get better, that's a big plus mark for him. And, the guy's aerospace engineering major. How many times do you get that? But what I've said also is my caution to him is make sure, and I need you guys to either co-sign or tell me I'm out to lunch, okay? Because I told him, I said, make sure that these NFL teams know that you're not worried about being an aerospace engineering major and designing planes or flying planes. For about 15 years, that you're all in on ball. I said, because I've been around these guys long enough that the guys who seemingly have options sometimes scare the heck out of them.
Guys
who do really well on the Wunderlic,
Here's one for you, and I'll give you this one. And I don't remember this. I don't think this was about Dobbs. It was about another player in this year's draft class. But it was a similar type of situation, extremely intelligent player, And the way that this personnel executive put it to me this way, CD, he said, "I'm a little uncomfortable drafting a guy whose fallback plan is better than playing in the NFL."
See, you know, Bucky, I mean, your experience, you've probably heard plenty of that in different meetings, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, like we hear guys talk about, you know, I don't want them too smart. I don't want to be distracted yeah. by the other stuff that is out there. I want their focus to be all in. I think with Dobbs, you are right, CD. I think he certainly has benefited from having the opportunity to sit down in front of coaches. He is very intelligent, very articulate. He has a nice mix of tools when it comes to athleticism and yeah. raw arm talent. And I also believe that he benefits a little bit from the Dak Prescott
Bingo.
Effect. When Dak Prescott goes from the SEC, and it's funny because I looked up some stuff on Josh. Josh is one of only three quarterbacks to have 15 pass touchdowns and 10 rush touchdowns in multiple seasons. The other yeah. guys were Dak Prescott and Tim Tebow. And when you look at what Dak Prescott was able to do, I think more teams are kind of scouring the ranks, trying to find that athletic quarterback that maybe they pegged as a spread guy
yeah.
that maybe has the ability to be more than what we initially forecasted when we looked at him first.
We talked to him. We had him on the podcast, and you can check yeah. that out if you haven't checked it out. It's interesting. Just he's a great interview. You know him. He's a classic
kid.
As a thrower, okay, let's take the athletic yep. ability aside. When yep. I looked at him as a thrower, my comparison for him, I want to get your thoughts on this one. Got to go a little bit in the Wayback Machine. When I looked it up, I didn't realize this dude's 32 years old now. Matt Moore, as a thrower. And Matt Moore's
Ooh.
Been a really good number two in the league for a decade.
And actually had an opportunity to be a number one at other places, but elected to stay in Miami. So that's a good comparison. You know,
I like that one.
You know,
I like that one a lot. Let me ask you guys this real quick. As a quick follow-up, and then I'm going to throw one more at you real fast. The quick follow-up with what you said, Bucky, because I've been saying this for about the last week or two. The Dak Prescott effect of last year, him with multiple great success in college, got better as he went along, dispelled the idea, because I was one of those ones who said, well, maybe, his junior year, I was like, well, is he going to be a tight end or an H-back, or is he going to be a quarterback? And in his senior year, I was all in, like, he deserves a chance to be a quarterback. Did I see this coming? No, I'm not going to sit here and lie about that. But they got him in the fourth last year. Bucky, do you think that with that Dak Prescott effect, that for Josh Dobbs, people might be willing to pull the trigger a little bit earlier just so they don't miss out on perhaps what we saw last year?
I think a couple of different things with the Dak Prescott thing and what we have to realize with Dak Prescott. In his process, he was dinged because he had a DUI shortly
right.
after his pro day. And so it was about a month before.
The fight on spring break. Remember?
Right. So it was a month before the draft, and so it kind of raised some concerns about the character and the like. I had him graded kind of in a second round, early mm-hmm. third round category. I really like Dak Prescott a lot because, to me, he kind of reminded me of a rugged playmaker like a Steve McNair. I think Josh Dobbs certainly would get a round bump because of the Dak Prescott thing. Dak Prescott has led people to go back and try and figure out, what did we miss? Is it
right.
just the right situation, or what did we miss on the kid? Because when you look at Dak Prescott, the spread system is a spread. A lot of these guys are playing in the spread. Did we know that he would be able to transition as quickly in Dallas? No, because he got his chance. But I do believe they're going to look for the intangible qualities, the intelligence, and the personality. And those things for Josh Dobbs, they play in his favor.
Yeah, the thing that Dak has, I think, between the two of them, where I would give him a big advantage is frame.
Yeah.
Because Dak's full grown man coming out, and Josh, you can see, is going to need to put on some more body armor. You know, he's going to need to build that up a little bit. He's a lot slender. Last question on quarterbacks for you too. All right. If Chad Kelly was clean off the field, it'd be an entirely different discussion about his draft prospects, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I don't think he would go up there quite as high as some folks have talked about. I think if he was clean, even if he was clean, you talk about the arm strength, which is outstanding.
Yep.
I love that, and he can move around a little bit. But, you know, we talk about Mahomes being a little bit irresponsible with the football.
Uh-huh.
Chad Kelly can be pretty darn irresponsible with the football too now.
The funny thing, I think they would be right there together.
Yeah.
I think they are pretty identical in terms of prospects. They are gunslingers that when you call the play, you have no idea what the play is going to turn out. And if you go look at Chad Kelly at his best, I think his best is comparable to Patrick Mahomes. And then when you also add in the legacy with his uncle being a Hall of Fame player, being in the league, if he didn't have the off-the-field stuff, I think he certainly would be a draftable guy, and I think you'd be comfortable somewhere in the middle rounds, maybe a little day two-ish. But it's hard to separate his character things because they're so
spectacular.
The
interesting thing with him, though, if we circle back, and by the way, we have an interview we're going to roll here in just a little bit with James Conner, running back from Pitt, who's a fascinating story.
So man, what a kid.
We'll get to that in just a little bit here. But the interesting thing is we give Deshaun Watson so much credit for the two performances against Alabama. If we're going to play that game, you better go look up Chad Kelly's two games against Alabama too now, because he put on a clinic in both those games he had against them. I want to say, over 800 yards. I want to say 7 or 8 touchdowns, one pick.
Torched him. He was 1-1 against him too, right?
Yeah.
1-1 just like that. And also the game that he really lit it up when he was surrounded by playmakers. He had Laquan Treadwell and all those guys, Laramie Tunsil and those guys working.
We say that. Is Laquan Treadwell a big time player?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like he had pros.
Yeah,
because argument would be he had two first rounders on that team. Evan Engram, wherever he goes, will he be a first rounder or whatever? So the thing with Chad Kelly is when he's under control and he plays within the system, he absolutely has NFL talent. It's just a matter of do you trust the personality? Do you trust the kid? Can you trust that he's gonna have the right work habits and avoid the other stuff that kind of makes you cringe when you think about your franchise quarterback being involved in some of the stuff that he's been involved in?
I spent time with him last summer, guys, and I found him fun, engaging kid, the whole deal. Now, I'm not naive. I know he had some stuff. I mean, his stuff goes way back. I mean, it's not just like it happened once, you know, you're going back to Clemson and before Clemson and right on down the line. But I found that, you know, it was that time, and I was around a bunch of other adults, okay, coaches, people of that nature. And what I discovered was the same comments that they were making about Chad Kelly versus what the players were making about Chad Kelly, the guys that he was hanging with, the same exact dialogue that I went through with Johnny Manziel. Mm-hmm. Adults couldn't stand him. Kids loved him.
Yep.
Same exact thing.
Yep.
I mean, the kids loved playing with Johnny, and Johnny was cool, and, you know, rally around Johnny, and every adult you'd meet, to go, oh, Lord. And I got the same exact thing about Chad, because I was like, man, that Kelly kid, I enjoyed my time with him. And every person like, what? Oh, I don't know about that kid. I don't know about that kid. Then I'd meet some of the other guys who were his age, his peers. Oh, man, Chad Kelly, we're going to hang with Chad tonight. We're going with Chad. And I was like, wow, this is just like Manziel. The exact same thing. Kids loved him. Adults weren't so crazy about it.
No, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with this quarterback group when it's all said and done here. How about the backs, CD? How would you stack the backs? Give me 1, 2, 3. How would you stack them in this draft?
Well, I've got Fournette as my number one. I feel like people are picking at him. Bucky and I had this conversation a couple of years ago. Bucky, you remember we always talked about that. It's almost like a bar graph where guys who are – we think of the number one guy start that way, and then we get bored, and we got a beat on them.
Yep.
And they seem to take a dip, and we rise other people. And then as we get closer to the draft, all of a sudden we realize why we like that guy so much. You know, remember Andrew Luck and RG3?
Yep.
You know, it's the same type of a thing for me. Fournette is my number one. He can do everything, and I thought his pro day – really helped illuminate the fact that at 228, him catching the ball, he's got a little more wiggle than you want to give him credit for, et cetera. But after that, I still think McCaffrey's the most complete back in the whole deal. I mean, we've all talked about it. The darn combine, when he went out there and ran routes, I don't know that any receiver in the draft runs better routes than the kid. And I think that he can do a lot more things, and I get people killing me. Oh, well, he's only got 10 on the bench press. I said, he didn't bench press for the combine. He tried to get faster because he knew he needed to run 4.5 or better, and he did. So I love him.
Hold on, before you move on from McCaffrey. CD, are you concerned at all about his play and performance dipping a little bit from 2015 to 2016? And I know in 2015 he had a historic season where he broke Barry Sanders' all-purpose yardage mark, and he was everything that everyone wanted him to be. And then this year, he wasn't the same guy. To me, he didn't look like he was as explosive on tape. Do you have any concerns about that, or do you just kind of attribute that to some of the lower leg injuries that they've kind of talked about at Stanford when no one has necessarily said, hey, he was really affected by these things happening to his legs?
You know, it's a legitimate concern because you always worry about running backs and what the wear and tear is, because remember with him, he either ran it or he caught it or he returned it. You know, I mean, that was kind of how it was, you know. Down one, toss it to him. Next thing, you swing it to him. Okay, now can he return a punt? So you worry about that a little bit, but I'm not overly concerned about it. I think that people who understand what they're doing, you get the right thing. I think he'll lock himself in the weight room and get stronger as he goes along. I just think he's an innate playmaker, just a natural kid. And I do believe that he sometimes gets nailed by the stereotype of a white running back.
Oh,
I
without
really do.
I mean, without I don't think
question, any question about it.
Yeah, without question, he has a chip on his shoulder about that, and it's understandable.
Oh,
I get that.
Him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he has a chip about that. And
see, I don't get the stats thing doesn't bother me at all. I'm just pulled up his game log here.
Mm-hmm. Plus, did you see the quarterbacking change?
Yeah, they lost a piece there at quarterback. But I mean, I'm looking at it. He had three games in the whole year where he didn't rush for over 100.
Mm-hmm.
So he's over, and I'm talking about. I'll just go through it. 126, 172, 138. The Washington game, I was there. That was just a butt kicking. That Washington front got after him in that game. Washington State, he was hurt and only carried it 8 times. Colorado, 92, and then he finishes up the year 169, 199, 135, 284, 204, and long runs this year in games 41, 33. 45, 51, 61, 90, 42. So, I mean, I don't think – look, he rushed for 1,600 yards.
He
set the bar so insanely high
did.
The year before.
I just wonder, like – and I knew he was trying to implement some of Le'Veon Bell's, patience into his game. I just wondered in my notes, I wondered if he had the same burst that he had, because I remember writing down notes in 2015 that, look, this is the fastest guy on the field. His 0 to 60 is remarkable. Last season, I didn't see that, and I didn't see the same – level of finishing runs in terms of running through contact. I felt like he ran through contact better, and that maybe that was something to do with the knee and the ankles and those other stuff. I just felt like in 2015 he was a more dominant prospect than he was the previous year. But I agree with you in terms of he has everything. He can check off the boxes as an inside outside runner, catching out the backfield and in the return game, in the system, the right system where you don't overload him with too much of anything. He's gonna be a headache for somebody.
If Mixon doesn't have off-field, does Mixon go ahead of McCaffrey?
I think Mixon would be in the mix with Fournette to be the first running back.
I think he's the best combination of all those things with size. And I've compared him to David Johnson in terms of how I think he can play as a pro. I think he can affect you as a runner and a receiver. If he didn't have the stuff, I think we'd be talking about a guy that, we could say rivals the impact that
meant. He would be a top 15. He would be a top 15 pick at worst.
And I've seen, you guys have done such a great job of talking about players and breaking them down and all. I think I saw something from you guys about now the momentum is starting to build a little bit of, or at least a scout or two has said, you know something? You're going to catch heat. No matter where you draft him,
mm-hmm.
why are you going to wait?
Yeah, I mean,
let someone else get him.
The perfect
doesn't matter if it's round one or round seven. You're going to catch heck.
No question. That's why
what do you do?
You look at the team. That Tampa is the team.
Mm-hmm.
That's the team because you can look at them and where they are offensively with a quarterback that's ready to take that next step. And you've bringing DeSean Jackson to team up with Mike Evans. And if you're going to take him in the second round, you're going to get
him in the first.
You might as well go ahead and just take him at 19.
You're not going to get a discount.
Yeah.
You're
going to get the heat.
And throw something on top of that. They took Jameis, number one in the entire draft.
When it wasn't popular.
A whole lot of stuff going down. And people were like, are you sure? In this community, and they haven't had any issues. Okay, the kid has come through for them. He's the unquestioned face of the deal, the whole thing. And let's face it, I think they're ready to move on from Doug Martin. So here you get a chance to do this. If anyone's going to take the shot, it could very well be them, as you guys have pointed out. But this kid, look, I get why people don't want to talk about him. I get why people don't want to discuss it. I think that come draft time, we have to say the same thing. At least I'm of the opinion of, let's not forget the young lady. Okay, let's remember her as well. and remember that and train, because those of us who have daughters and other things, this is not an easy deal. Mm-hmm. But he's in a position where he's, quote-unquote, served his penalty. People at Oklahoma vouch for him in a huge way. I mean, I had one guy ready to fight me on the whole thing. They really believe in this kid. Frank Clark was a second rounder, right, with Seattle?
No video, though.
No video. That's the difference. But Frank Clark, we haven't had a peep out of Frank Clark in his years in Seattle so far. So can people grow up, get better? Yes, they can. You're taking a gamble, quote-unquote. But at the same time, this kid, if people believe in him, as you guys have pointed out, this is going to be an interesting deal because we're all, you know, we kind of went into it a couple weeks ago thinking, well, from second round is when we start talking Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
We might have that explosion in Philadelphia of his name being called in the first round because, you know, there's always that, whoa.
Yeah.
This could be that moment.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked with him. I mean, if he went in the – first round or the fifth round. I mean, I think it's just kind of it really is as simple. It's a yes or no with a team. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have that discussion as an organization. We want him on our team or we don't want him on our team. We want to deal with this or we don't want to deal with this. So once that decision is made, then it's just about when you want to do it. And I think, again, the more you discuss it and internally, if you're okay with it, then I don't know why you would wait. If he's a great football player, if you're okay with it, if he passes your tests and is acceptable, I don't know why you would, and I've made the case the second round to me was that's usually where you see things like this happen. But this year, who knows? Maybe some team will do it in the first.
Yeah. I mean, Randy Gregory, with all of his stuff, still went in the second.
Yeah.
So guys can talk about stuff and this is going to prevent and this, that, and everything. Second round, as you guys have pointed out, that's kind of like your line of demarcation. But boy, oh boy, if we're sitting there in Philadelphia on the first night and someone does do this, that will be that moment because every draft has that first round moment. Last year was Laramie Tunsil and the video that hit and he ended up going 13 when we thought he'd go in the top five. What's it going to be this year? It happens every year. There's that one moment where you go, oh, my God. You know, poor Brady Quinn, when Ted Ginn Jr. went, remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
To the Dolphins at 9? I still see Brady going, now that's a surprise.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. And the whole place, the whole place came unglued because we thought that was a lock pick. Could this be that moment for this year's draft? That would be interesting.
Last question here, CD, before we let you run.
Yeah.
We've had fun in the past about the lack of Vols. We got a bunch of Vols in this year's draft, so you're going to have your revenge. But I need your favorite Vol in this draft, and why?
Well, Kamara's my favorite.
Okay.
Kamara's my favorite. I just think he can do everything. I see a lot of, it's a Tennessee connection, but a lot of young Charlie Garner and his ability to do a lot of things and do them well. And I think that he's my favorite. My major league sleeper is Josh Malone.
Well, that's Bucky's guy.
That is my guy.
You guys are on the same team on that one.
I got a big crush on Josh Malone in terms of player.
Do?
I think he's underrated. I think he's one of those guys that we're going to look back and wonder, how did we miss on him in terms of the lack of conversation? Because when I watched him this last year, I think he has the qualities to be a number one receiver. I think he can play the long ball and do all those things. But I also think he's a pretty good route runner.
Mm-hmm.
He can run after the catch. And I truly believe, having watched him grow from high school all the way through, his best football is ahead. And in one of those systems that values a tall receiver that can do a lot of different things, I think he can emerge as a star.
Yeah, I've told people in recent weeks, my opinion is he is going to have a bigger, better career than Robert Meacham, who ended up being a first-round pick.
Yep.
Even though Malone will not be, I think he's going to have that. I think he's going to have a much better career where you're going to look at him and go, that's what we thought Meacham was going to be. Was it Justin Hunter, when as a second-round kid, we thought maybe he was going to be that guy.
Even Cordero Patterson, in a way, in terms of just being a receiver as opposed
Patterson
to a returner.
So much more talented, but just never could fit into things. Like, look, if you put an old-school coach with Cordero Patterson, North Turner was like, I'm not spending time just designing stuff for him.
Yep.
And now I think that's going to be Oakland's challenge. Okay, just figure out ways to get the ball in his hands. Even if he doesn't have a full grasp of everything else in the playbook, And when Norv, you know, you guys know Norv. Norv's like, I ain't doing that. It's not happening. Go return kicks and leave me the heck alone. This is where he gets a rebirth. But this is where I think Malone, I'm with Bucky on this one. So we'll see how it all goes down.
Yeah, I gave him a 63, which is like a second-round grade as a wide receiver. My only two concerns with him, number one, getting off press is going to be a little bit of an issue for him. And number two, I didn't think he was going to help you as a special teamer. So if he's going to make your team and be on your team and be a contributor, he's going to have to be a number two or a number three, because he's not going to be your number four, because I don't really see him covering kicks.
Right. But as Bucky said, if he develops to that level that Bucky sees, he'd not have to worry about covering those kicks.
Yeah, there you go.
He'll be off the hook on that one.
There you go. Well, hey, the time you spent with us, we're very grateful, CD. Philadelphia is going to be here before you know it, and we'll see you out there. Look forward to getting some good meals.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you guys. You guys keep kicking butt on Pass to the Draft. Keep educating everybody out there. I love the tweets you're putting out and all the other stuff. I'm trying to learn from them, too. I'm sitting here with a mound of paper now that I printed out trying to read your guys' stuff so I can be up and educated so we can get to Philadelphia and then find the off-the-wall cheesesteak place.
Yes.
That's not a chain.
Yeah, we're not going chain.
A good one.
We're going local. We're going local. And by the way,
I'm going to call Fran Duffy from the Eagles and say, all right, Fran, hook us up. Where should we go?
And it's at CFD22, correct, Charles?
Yes, sir. Look forward to it, guys. Thanks for the time. You guys keep kicking butt, okay? See you, DJ. See you, Bucky.
All right, we love you, man. We'll see you soon. That's Charles Davis, one of our favorites, longtime friend, Tennessee Volunteer, proud volunteer. It's going to be a better draft for him this year, Buck. Lots of volunteers coming off the board.
Oh, he should be excited because they're a ton. We didn't even talk about the guy that probably go first, Derek Barnett. But he's right, and I think if I'm a Vol fan, if I'm a VFL, isn't that what – hashtag VFL?
Hashtag VFL.
Vol for life or whatever
Vol for
it is.
Laughs.
Or whatever,
oh.
Whatever. No, I mean, it just came out. It came out incorrectly.
Yeah.
But if, if I'm a volunteer, I might be a little salty if they have all these NFL picks and we're not winning the SEC.
Very salty, boys. Very salty.
You want to see? You guys want to see a professional transition here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Quarterback of Tennessee, name?
Josh Dobbs.
Joshua Dobbs.
Joshua Dobbs. Who'd he beat out?
Oh, he beat out Nathan Peterman.
Nathan Peterman went to
Pittsburgh.
And Nathan Peterman's running back?
James Conner.
James Conner. James Conner is going to join us right now. We've got a special guest here, Pitt running back James Conner. James, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, boss. How you doing?
Good, man. We're putting you through the car wash today, huh? We got a couple TV shows. Now we're throwing you in the studio here.
It's all a blessing, though. I'm thankful for it.
Yeah, you're still in good shape because I don't see any sweat. I don't see you perspiring at all. You're ready to go here. Yes, hey, look, everybody knows you're off the field story. I don't want to go there. Everybody has read about it. It's a fantastic, it's an amazing story. But I want to talk some football with you.
Yes, sir.
And Chance, we've talked off the air, and I've talked about how I describe your running style, just like you're thirsty for contact. You are a physical back. How would you describe your running style?
Same way. I just, you know, it all starts with the huddle call when you know you're getting the ball. And then from that point on, it's just, you know, you got the whole team counting on you. And so, man, just lowering that shoulder, just feeling unstoppable, really. Anything that's in your way, just move those chains. So breaking tackles, judge of the contact, all that good stuff.
It doesn't have to be this year. It could be any time during your college career. A couple of things. Number one, give me your favorite huddle call. What run do you prefer the best?
2014 was Fire Rat Panther, and that was when we had a tight end in our guard pooling. I'm just taking my drop step, finding the hole, want to hit A-gap out. That was with Coach Chris' offense, man, just with the hogs up front. We just, you know, that was our go-to. Any play that play worked for us, so that was Fire Rat Panther.
Patient to explode through, right?
Oh, patient. Yep, exactly. Slow too fast. That's what we say. But
same
difference. Same thing.
Speaking
thing.
The same language there. What about a run? Give me your signature run. Got a chance to see. We talked about this. What you did to Tankersley from Clemson wasn't cool, man. I don't know what he did to you, but what you did to him on the edge, the way you ran him over. I know you had some physical runs against the safety from Penn State and others. But what's your favorite run from this year?
From this year, easy for Clemson. We were down by a touchdown, 5 minutes left in the game, and it was a choice left, which that gave our quarterback an option to either give it to me. It was a cut, inside zone play out the gun, or he could pass it, throw the flat. He gave it to me, and I could jump cut, and I was in the hole, and I got out the hole real fast. I threw a stiff arm, and I scored. And it was just an emotional run for me because with everything I've been through, it was hard for my stamina and everything for me to play a full game. But that only 5 minutes left in the game for me to have that big run versus Clemson at their place, man, it was just – I'll never forget that run.
How quiet did that stadium get at that time?
Man, it got quiet. But our fans traveled well for that one. And we had a little small section up top, and you could hear them screaming. So, man, it was awesome. It was something I always remember.
All right, give me a running back you've had in your game after NFL guy.
Easy. Marshawn Lynch.
Okay.
The whole reason why I wear number 24, and just every snap, you know, something special, whether it's just a stiff arm, anything. It's just, you know, he refuses to go down. I just love it, and I just try to have that beast mode mentality.
This is why I feel like I should buy a lottery ticket, boys, behind the glass, because they said I want to talk about a running back that James reminds me of, and so yeah. I said we got a little bit of time, go get some footage. I need some footage of this running back right here.
Yeah.
And it was Marshawn Lynch, and I said you watch, he's gonna say his favorite back because of his style.
Yeah.
Is this guy right here?
I mean, just deceptive speed. You know, he's covering ground. Didn't run the fastest 40. I didn't run the fastest 40. You know, but he's just moving those chains, and defenders do not want to tackle him, and you wear him down in the fourth quarter. That's when we make our money.
Yeah, we talk about making your money in the fourth quarter. He is one of the best 4-minute backs.
Yep.
And talk about that, the importance of being able to have that hammer. You got a lead. You need to salt the game away.
Exactly. Yeah. For you to close the game, and you just want to two hands on the ball and just keep moving those chains, get first down, and so eventually we can just take a knee and seal the game. So it's very important to have that hog, that horse that can, you know, close the game for you.
All right, me and Bucky were in here as former scouts. We always talk about the most important aspects in each position. So your position, the running back position, what do you think, characteristic-wise, the number one most important characteristic?
On the field?
Yeah.
Ball security.
Yep.
Because you got the whole team with you when you have the ball. And Coach Canada, my offensive coordinator this past season, every day we were practicing ball security, and that's what he would preach. I mean, turnovers, you can't have them. You know, you won't win games like that. So the main thing is ball security. Can you hold on to the ball?
I'm going to take you down the list now. Give me number two. That's the most important. You got to hold on to the rock. What's number two? In terms of what you want a running back to have, this skill set you want him to have, what is it?
Well, besides, like I always say, the break in tackles and everything, but you got to protect your quarterback, you know, that pass protection, because, you know, you can't let him get no big shot took on him. So you got to be able to pass protect. But that's just, you know, something that you need to be able to do. But as for characteristics, I would say, you know, the first was ball security, and second,
this is what I go.
Vision. You're right. Yeah, I said that too. I was thinking of that.
You're there. You're there.
Yeah, I mean, because
– and you got good vision.
Of course. Thank you. Appreciate it.
I mean, well, here's the thing. Look, I will always say when you're scouting running backs, I don't care if you're big and fast. If you're running the back of your offensive line,
exactly.
That ain't helping me.
Yeah, you're not doing no good doing that. So, yeah, vision. I mean, you got to be able to see the hole and make the best decision, and you have to do it fast too. So, yeah, ball security and vision.
That's a pretty good combination there. What is the an NFL team you're going to? Is there a fan? Are you a fan of a particular team? Like, you're going to be excited wherever you get picked by. Don't give me that canned answer. So give me the this team called. You're going to be like, you guys are not going to believe who this is right now.
A couple. I would love. Growing up, I was a Cowboys fan.
Okay.
I mean, but Zeke's doing a great job over there. So I don't think they need one. Steelers will be awesome. I'm familiar with Heinz Field. You know, it's close to my home. So of Erie, Pennsylvania. Who else? Seattle.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Seattle. I know they just got Lacy, you know, but you can still go anywhere and learn. So, you know, but anybody, now I'm giving you that answer that you
know. No. You gave me teams. That's more teams than I thought I would get from you.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, but anybody, you know, who takes me, just they get the ball player.
This is a draft that's loaded in running backs. Have you watched or studied any of these other guys? Maybe just when you have an off week or something. So give me your quick scouting report on a couple backs in this draft. Pick whatever ones you want. And trust me, as any good player should, when we've talked before, you believe you're the best guy.
Of course.
I get that. But tell me about some of these other dudes.
Well, it was awesome having an invite to the combine to see those guys up close and personal and get to know them personally. Fournette is obviously, you know, a beast with his height, weight, his speed. You know, and his tape doesn't lie either. Dalvin is liable to do anything at any moment, you know, take it to the house, break tackles. McCaffrey is awesome. His routes were so crisp at the combine, you know, just watching like, wow, I gave him he texted me after and said, I'm a fan of you. And I was like, man, I've been
cool.
A fan of you, you know, for everything that he's done. And so, those guys, man, they're ball players as well. And it was fun to get to know them more.
All right, that's pretty cool, man. All right, this is something we've done with every prospect that we bring through here. So I talked about, before we worry about the off-field stuff, but this is the three questions we hit up. Who's your hero? Mm-hmm. What's the greatest highlight of your career? And what's the biggest hardship you've overcome? Now, you have a unique story on the hardship front, so I'll let you tackle that here.
Yeah, the hardship. Hodgkin's lymphoma, cancer, easily the biggest thing I've overcome in my life. Thankful for it. If I could go back, I wouldn't change a thing in my life, because it made me a better person and just taught me to be grateful for everything in life. You know, no matter how small it is, just be grateful for it. And the game of football, I always cherish it. And I'm so passionate about it because it was almost taken from me. So anybody who drafts me is going to get a passionate guy.
How about now let's go to your highlight, your greatest highlight. I mean, it's hard to beat the Clemson win.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Is that the one, or is there something else I'm not thinking of?
Overall, Clemson, Penn State was just because the rivalry, the last time we played, I believe, was 99 or 2000. And so now 2016, you know, 16 years later, for us to – when they brought back that rivalry and for us to bring home, you know, being, you know, the best in PA, that was a special one that I remember, and the Clemson win, for them to be national champions and us the only team that beat them. I remember that one too. So,
was there a text chain with your teammates when Clemson won the whole thing between you?
Like, oh,
come on, man!
Yeah, we said we need a ring. You said we national champs and we the Rose Bowl champs.
Yeah, there you go. You got both of them. That's right.
All right,
that's
so.
Right. How about now? Your hero could be anybody. Could be in on the field, off the field. Just who's your hero?
My brothers. I can't put one above the other one. Just those guys just raised me. They really ones who raised me and made me the man I am today. Just anything I needed there, my whole life, security. They were just there for me, mentors, role models, everything. And it just, there's no James Conner. And I'm here. I get all this, you know, attention out of the media. I'm on NFL Total Access here. But without those guys in my life, none of that's possible. So all of those guys.
That's very cool. Look, you were one of my favorite players to watch. Again,
thank you, boss.
Angry, violent. Again, I don't know what Tankersley did from Clemson.
He kicked this
guy off. It was just nasty what you did to him. Anyways, that's James Conner. James, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Bucky, James Conner, one of the easier guys to root for in this draft class.
Very easy to root for, a guy that has overcome a lot. He has come back and not only just kind of beat the cancer, but he's come back and been a very productive player. I would be excited to hear his name called on draft day because I think they're not only getting a special player, but a special young man with the right kind of stuff inside.
Yeah, I think he's going to be somebody that's going to finish out football games and is going to be somebody that fans are going to fall in love with his style, just a physical football player. Bucky, question for you.
What you got?
What's the first thing you put on, the last thing you take off?
Ooh. You know, normally, under most circumstances, I would say my socks. But I'm going to say
it's actually your underwear.
Really?
Yes, it's your underwear.
I don't normally get down like that.
You need to make your most important piece of clothing the best it can be, and you need to do that with MeUndies.
What is MeUndies?
MeUndies, let me just tell you what MeUndies is. It's a seriously soft, feel-good underwear. It's delivered right to your door. It's a subscription thing we have here. Designed in LA, made from sustainably sourced micromodal, a fabric 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft, micromodal, yeah, or that. They're pretty darn comfortable, Bucky. They come in classic colors, bold shades, adventurous patterns. I know you like the adventurous patterns.
I do.
You can tailor your underwear to your own personal style.
Okay, so I was playing possum, and guess what? You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You still can save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/NFL2017, and get 20% off your first pair.
Okay, go ahead. Revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/NFL2017, MeUndies.com/NFL2017. All right, Buck, it was great to have CD on here. He's doing great. Look forward to seeing him in Philadelphia. James Conner, again, a stud. Got to talk a lot about these quarterbacks. We're going to be back later on this week with a jam-packed
Thursday
episode. You've got a brand-new mock draft coming out.
I'm excited about it. I'm excited about letting the Twitterverse come at me over some hypotheticals.
Yep. Yeah, they will. They'll get fired up. I like. Did you see my tweet, by the way?
Which one?
Mock draft?
Which one?
So the NFL account sent out a link to my mock draft. It says,
oh, yeah.
Move the Sticks mock draft
4.0. Right.
So I retweet it and say, you're an idiot. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. We're not taking that guy.
Flip the script. Everybody's confused.
That's right. Beat him to the punch.
Yeah.
It was like a little inception.
Ooh, I got plenty of surprises. Lots of surprises.
Before we get out of here, Myles Garrett, potential number one pick, had an interview with ESPN.
Yep.
Does this concern you, or does this psych you up as a franchise? He said,
"Give me the quote."
And because if you don't draft me at number one, I will punish your team for the next 10 to 12 years. I'll knock your QB out of the game every time we play you, and I'll have to kick the hell out of number one, whoever it is.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah,
I'm okay.
A lot was made too. I guess he was supposed to go on ESPN Radio with Mike and Mike with Booger, and then he canceled because Booger had been critical of him.
Booger likes Barnett, I think.
Yeah.
He canceled.
He's been pretty open about
that. He canceled because he didn't want to face Booger?
That's kind of the story I was told, but I don't know, you know, all the particulars on this.
He can't be sensitive like that. If he's going to be the number one pick, he has to be able to stand up in front of Mike and
take it.
Take it.
Yep.
Gotta take some heat.
Maybe he's just not a Mike and Mike fan. I don't know.
You know he's taking heat, and they're not – teams aren't giving him passes, so why do it in – Why not do it in the media as well?
He should at least.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Okay.
We got to get some more information on that.
Yep,
I got to talk to Booger. I got to give Booger a call and find out what happened there. All right, that's going to do it for us today. A lot of you have done us a huge favor and given us reviews on iTunes. So those are jumping way up. We're getting our rating up there. That helps us out. Tell a friend. Leave us a review if you haven't already on iTunes, and be sure to be on the lookout for our video content. A lot of videos coming your way, along with another audio episode later this week. That's going to do it. DJ, he's Bucky. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.